wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. For Humanity means that we need to give, we need to help our other fellow human beings, not that we just keep to ourselves. Something that we have discussed in the previous episodes, and we said that greed is a problem for humanity. We need to make sure that we don't fall into it. Now, smart human beings are the ones that think, are the ones that act on thinking, the ones who contemplate. Allah says in the Quran, there are signs لِأُولِي الْأَلْبَابِ, those who have intellect, those who think. Those who don't think, obviously, they are in a losing end. Sometimes we see that there are a lot of people and systems in this world that are greedy systems, systems that don't help. Rather, they hoard from people. They take from people. And even when they make money from the resources of the land, it does not go to people as well. They give them just little by little, just to keep them wanting more and to keep enslaving them. This is what almost 100% of the systems of the world that we have. I'm not aware of a system that's generous enough to say, I want to make my people as rich as possible, as happy as possible. There might be people, you know, systems, they give more than others. But to have it in their constitution that they want to make their people the wealthiest, the happiest, I have not seen. You can correct me. You can email me if you've seen such a thing. The idea here is we need to give. We need to be able to give. So greed is something that we should not have. If a smart person, a person that thinks of this world as self, and how short we get to live in this world, one gets to think, is it really worth it to have so much money and not help other people? And mind you, sometimes you don't have to be a billionaire or a millionaire or thousandaire, if I can use that word, to be able to give. Sometimes just giving what you have is enough for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And Allah says, they give even if they, walau kana bihim, Allah says, even if they had, they themselves were on poverty, khasasa. Even if they were, themselves were feeling poverty, but sometimes they might have a bit of money, but these people will still give it. These people will still give it to other people. Like we can see with our imams, for example, they would always do that. Even when they don't have, they give whatever they have. Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba, alayhi salam, twice he gave every single item that he has beside the fact his clothes. And he helped other people. We also need to do that as well, to give to other people. Why? Because we only live for a very short time. Let me take a short break and then we'll come back and continue this topic.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We were saying that a person who thinks of his afterlife and thinks of death and how short this world is, surely greed is not going to be a problem for him. It will be, you know, an easy task for him to give and share. But for those who understand exactly what death is, this and what will happen after death. Not just me and people who are like me say, yeah, surely we'll die. Surely there's an akhirah. But that's just words. We haven't understood the concept. We have not lived the concept of death. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he was saying to one person, he says, Ama tahzan, ama tahtam, ama ta'lam. Don't you feel sad? Don't you feel worry? Don't you feel pain? The man says, Bala wallah, I do. Then the Imam says to him, فَإِذَا كَانَ ذَلِكَ مِنْهَا. If this is how life is, it's just, you know, pain and misery and worry. فَذْكُرَ الْمَوْتِ. Then remember death. وَوَحْدَتَكَ فِي قَبْرِكَ. Remember the loneliness of the grave. Now you have money, you have people, but tomorrow there will be no one there to keep you company. وَسَيَلَانُ عَيْنَكَ عَلَىٰ خَدَّيْكَ. And when your eyes will melt on your cheeks, because the body will get decomposed in the grave. وَتَقَطْعُ أَوْصَالَكَ. And the body parts will be, they will fall apart by themselves. The body will get decomposed, and all the body limbs will start to fall apart. وَأَكْلِ الدُّودِ مِنْ لَحْمِكَ. And the insects and worms, as they start to come and eat from your meat. وبلاك. And then you will vanish. The body will vanish. وانقطاعك عن الدنيا. And there will be no connection and no return to this world. فإن ذلك يحثك على العمل. If you think of these things, they should make you work for your akhirah. They should make you become a generous person. And the Imam says, وَيَرْدَعَكَ عَنْ كَثِيرًا مِنَ الْحِرْصِ. And should prevent you from so much of greed. If I constantly keep thinking of these things, and I believe they will happen to me, and one day I will face them, whether I like it or not, then that surely will help me prevent the greed. So I say, look, I'm going to a place where I don't know the laws, I don't know how things will work down there, but I know for sure, I've been told that if I give and if I help others with whatever I have, then the other world will be a better place for me. So that will make me work harder and become less stingier. And this is what the Ahl Bayt alayhim salamullah say. And also the mu'mineen, they have karama, honor in the eyes of Allah, those who give. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when He describes them, He says, إِلَّا الْمُصَلِّينَ. Except those who pray. الَّذِينَ هُمْ عَلَىٰ صَلَاتِهِمْ دَائِمُونَ. Those who constantly pray and protect the salah. And then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, straight away He says after salah, وَالَّذِينَ فِي أَمْوَالِهِمْ حَقٌّ مَعْلُومٌ لِلسَّائِلِ وَالْمَحْرُومِ. And in their money, there's a portion of it designated for those who ask and for the needy. A mu'min, to be a mu'min, he needs to have these two traits. Salah, constantly, and giving constantly. So these people, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has prepared heaven for them. And He says, وَالَّذِينَ يُصَدِّقُونَ بِيَوْمُ الدِّينِ. Those are truly the true believers and truly believe in the hereafter. وَالَّذِينَ هُمْ مِنْ عَذَابِ رَبِّهِمْ مُشْفِقُونَ. And when it comes to the punishment of their Lord, are the ones who are afraid. So we need to be among those people who give and share, not the people that are greedy and deprive others. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales.
Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim, Islamic, Allah my Lord, His word Quran, Muhammad Prophet, praise be upon, I am Muslim for all of time.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, sisters and brothers from all around the world, you're listening to me from RIB English Radio and this is Youth Station. I am Bita, a medical student at your service, and today I have the pleasure to have brother Muzaffar with me. Hello brother, how are you doing?
Assalamu alaikum sister. Choo-choo-ka-choo, it's the Youth Station for you. Why does nobody do that? They hold back and then they...
Okay, go on, as the way you like.
So one of the most important and perhaps neglected concepts of Islam is Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahi anil Munkar, right? The enjoining of good and forbidding evil. Now, it should be pretty obvious that as Muslims, we're supposed to push for good things and stop evil from taking place. It kind of makes you a kind of a superhero. You know, you're supposed to aim to be a kind of superhero.
At all. You know, I'm against that thought that you have to be complete to criticize other people. You know, you shouldn't be perfect because you cannot be perfect as a human being. We have defects, we have problems. It doesn't mean that you have to be completely perfect to tell other people what is true and what is not. When you have the knowledge, even if that knowledge is not that much useful to you, you can actually invite other people through this knowledge. Maybe the other person, you know, would act as a way that is a good way, you know, to towards any guidelines and morality or anything. So I think this is everybody's responsibility as a human being, not a Muslim only. As a human being to invite other people to good things and forbid them from bad things, actually. This is my opinion about this matter.
Well, that's actually a good point. And it's not one you usually hear. There's actually a hadith where these people went to the Imam alayhi salam and they said, we don't tell others to do something unless we're doing it ourselves. And the Imam actually said to them, no, even if you're not doing it yourself, still tell others to do it. Yeah. Because it's a good thing. You should tell people to do it.
Yeah, actually, I do agree with that one. But, you know, when someone doesn't want to do something, you know, they have many excuses, you know that. For example, you are not doing the thing and then you're telling me to do that, I won't accept it. Because you are, for example, a double-faced person or something like that. Mm-hmm. We go through the road of judging others because we're going to, you know, inverting and turning the blame to some other people when they tell us, for example, to do or not to do something.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this guard actually is some kind of natural for him and being, but I don't like it. But at the same time, I think, unfortunately, in the world, not only in Islamic societies, there aren't any good ways to actually tell others what to do or not what to do. I mean, we have to be so soft to other people in a manner, in a way, in words that can be so beautiful to persuade that person to go for good things and, you know, just forbid them from bad things. But we cannot actually do that,
you know?
And I think this is the problem of this responsibility of ours.
I think another thing about this topic is how it's not restricted to the things that we would normally think that they're restricted to. When you think of Nahi an al-Munkar, especially nowadays, people think of, for example, hijab, you know, or they think of somebody drinking alcohol or some other drugs, I don't know, things like that. But
yeah,
if you zoom out a little bit, this is actually an Islamic concept which is a general principle for everything in life. So, for example, in the political sphere, if you're a politician, do you have a duty you know, to tell other politicians and to try to implement those policies in society which will have a good benefit, which will benefit the society, rather than those things which will harm the society. In the economic sphere, for example, if you're an economist, you should tell people to invest into good things and to boycott those evil things, etc. You know, it applies to every field of life.
And yeah,
for me, it's kind of like, no matter which field you're in, I mean, you're in the medical field, I'm in the media field, etc., whichever field you're in, there's an opportunity for you to be a kind of a hero. You don't like this term?
No, I don't like it at all. Because
why?
Heroism is, I think, a level of perfectionism, and I don't like it. It's like you are telling about someone which is superior than other people, and I feel like, okay, if that person is superior than me, what is the reason that, for example, this person considers himself or herself as a superior creature? We are the same, you know, we are both humans, we are both some opportunities, we have both some abilities, and I cannot accept this feeling of difference, this feeling of gap between our levels. You know what? And this feeling makes me have guards toward that person and that word.
There is a level of superiority, and that superiority shouldn't be there, like the judgment. I understand what you're saying there. But if you see some evil taking place, mm-hmm. you're not talking about the person. The person might be better than you, but that particular action that they're doing is certainly an evil action. And that action needs to be stopped. I'll give you an example. If you see a woman, mm-hmm. an old lady being robbed in the street, right? And this guy's just stolen her purse. Now, if you just stand there thinking, maybe that robber is better than me, you know, you've completely failed. You didn't realize what it was all about. No, you need to be on your toes. Do nahi anil munkar. You know, yeah. Dive in there, get that purse back, beat him up if you need to, and bring it back to the old lady.
Yeah.
It's very important. That's what I mean by being a hero.
I know what you mean, but the thing is, actually, we know that, for example, when a person is there, when a woman is there, and someone is stealing her wallet or something, nobody actually do something. But I think the reason behind, the root behind this action, that nobody do anything, nobody does anything about that person, is not the thinking that, okay, maybe that person is better than me or something like that. The reason that a person doesn't do anything is the way of mindset, the way of perspective that, why should I do the other person? So, my dear brother, let's go for a short break, then we're going to come back and, you know, go on this hot topic.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are here at Youth Station and we're talking about a nice topic.
Amr bil ma'aluf wa nahi anil munkar. The enjoining of good and forbidding evil. Evil things happen when the good do nothing. You know, and that's really what Islam is addressing through the concept of nahi anil munkar. Mm-hmm. Forbidding the evil. If you see evil taking place, if you see somebody being harmed, if you see some sort of flaw which is in society,
yeah.
and you don't step forward to stop that evil from taking place, and you just expect, oh, somebody else will do it, that's the problem right there.
There is another question for me. And there is another perspective of looking at this matter and issue, I think. For example, you have a special mindset. I know there are some typical guidelines. There is religion. There is many things that tells us what is right and what is wrong. But mm-hmm. sometimes you have a special mindset about something, you know. And because of your special mindset about something, you will excuse your action of forcing someone to have the same thought as you by the words of nahi anil munkar or something. This is a part of, for example, somebody's culture, but you don't believe in that. And this cultural conflict will lead you to think in a way that, okay, I have to tell that person not to do that, and you excuse your action, which may not be true, as nahi anil munkar.
I suppose so. So, for example, in certain cultures, they insist on marriage only between the same race. or that person has to be married, and you know, you have to get married to a certain someone who is from your same society, they speak the same language, they're from the same culture, they're from the same village, they're your cousin, for example, right? And this is kind of pushed and forced upon people because, I don't know, it's just become a kind of societal norm. This, can be argued, is not a good form. I mean, it's not nahi anil munkar because Islam denies, it actually chooses us to go against these kinds of cultural restrictions and to actually go for, in that case, you know, nahi anil munkar would actually be to say, no, this is not the right thing to do. A person should be free to marry outside of their race, outside of their culture and their
nationality. I think there is a misconception here. I'm not telling you about the cultural restriction. I'm telling you about the cultural differences. You know, I think sometimes it doesn't matter you are better or you're worse than that person you are, for example, telling to do something. The matter is sometimes you are not in a level to understand what is good and what is not.
Uh-huh.
How should you standardize yourself that you are at the level to do that? For example, you're in a situation that there are two people, and you know that from these two people, one of them is wrong, one of them is doing something wrong, okay? But you are not sure about your thought, and you think you are not achieving that sort of maturity to go between two and tell them what to do and what not to do. You know what I mean? As a youth generation, I have this problem, actually. Sometimes I have this feeling that I don't have enough maturity to go there and tell them what to do or what not to
do. For example, two of your friends have had a fight or a disagreement about something and you don't know which one to side with?
Yeah, exactly. And also, there is another thing, despite this fact, that because of my age, for example, I'm from the youth generation. And for example, if I go to an old person and tell that person what to do or what not to do, they will laugh at me. And this is the fact, actually, because of that, maybe I cannot do that correctly in society,
well,
you know?
Okay, well, if you don't understand the problem, then maybe you should go and talk to each party and try to understand.
Nice solution. Thank you. I've got that.
Too much of a cliche? No, but that makes sense, right?
Yeah, so, that makes
sense. And then
sense.
Once you understand the solution,
mm-hmm.
then you should step in and say, well, you know, you're right and you're wrong. And I think that you should apologize to A, should apologize to B or B should.
Sure.
Sometimes you can discuss with yourself, and even that would actually help.
Yeah, I did it.
There's actually a hadith that says that everybody has two prophets,
mm-hmm.
two hujjas, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the external hujja, and one of them is the internal hujja. The external hujja is the prophets and imams, alayhimu salam. And the internal hujja is the intellect, the aql.
Yeah.
And so we can actually actively discuss with our aql. Remove your emotions from it and actually just discuss with your aql, and it will actually guide you.
So how about my second problem about my age? You know, I'm not acceptable that much in society to go and do these actually responsibility of myself. And, you know, their reaction, you know, is somehow like, okay, how dare you to do that?
The best advice that I've ever gotten about this was from a good friend of mine, Sheikh Ali. He actually comes here once in a while as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, look, when you're talking to your parents, for example, do not try to approach them intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come with intellectual arguments. Don't bring them logic. Don't bring them proof. Because whatever you say, they'll turn around and be like, you think you know more than me.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You have to approach them emotionally. And what do you mean by emotionally? Your dad's doing something or your mom's doing something that you know is wrong. Don't go to them, the hadith says this, the Quran says this, or, you know, this is going to have this problem for you. No, go to them and let's say, Dad, you know, Mom, it really hurts my feelings when you do this because I want to see the best in you. Or you say, you know, that person actually said this good thing about you and I feel like they feel this way about you. I don't know. It's really strange and complicated. But the older generation is kind of stubborn when it comes to youths. They don't like being taught
what to do and what not to do. Yeah.
Man, look at the hadith, right? That beautiful story. That old man, he was doing wudu wrong.
Yeah.
Like he was proper. Like he was just like throwing water in his face. I don't know what he was doing.
Imam Hussein alayhi salam, Imam Hassan alayhi salam, they're youths at the time. So what do? They didn't go to him and say, hey, old man, you're doing it wrong. This is how you do
yeah.
it. Imam Hassan said to Imam Hussein, can you tell me if I'm doing it right? And he did it in the right way. It's really cool, but as youths, we have to be really clever and indirect. You know, when they disagree with something that you're doing in your life, you say, you know, but mom, but dad, you raised me to always speak the truth, or you raised me to always be diligent, and that's why I'm pursuing this path, or something like that, right?
I think this religion and this beautiful religion, and even the word Islam, which means being obedient towards God, is the story of our life. And always this story is touchable for me, that how can a guideline actually covers all of the parts of a human being life, and that is always so touching for me. And I think there is always something to learn. There is always something to understand from these beautiful stories of history of Islam, I think.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for, though.
Yeah. I wanted to go and move on for this episode, but unfortunately, this is all the time we have for today's episode, dear listeners. So I hope you enjoy the discussion of today, and I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. Considering the current state of the U.S. economy, experts and economists are predicting recession in the United States over the next year. The national debt of the United States is increasing every second, and the total national debt of the U.S. has reached more than $31.2 trillion. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Hill newspaper has covered this story. According to a Wall Street Journal opinion poll, high inflation is increasingly creating major strains on all Americans, including those with higher incomes than others. The poll, which was conducted by the paper by John Anzalone and Tony Fabrizio, the chief pollsters for President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump, respectively, found that 26% of registered voters with household incomes between $100,000 and $150,000 said inflation is creating major financial strains for their families. That figure is up from 19% in August and 14% in March. The share of Americans with household incomes between $150,000 and higher who reported major financial strains because of inflation remained stable compared to August, but rose significantly from March. 54% of Americans with household incomes of $60,000 or less also indicated major financial strains, up from 51% in August and 47% last March. Annual inflation hit a 40-year high earlier this year before softening in recent months. But price gains remain at elevated levels, and the monthly consumer price index, the CPI, has risen at an increasing pace for the past two consecutive months. Like many other surveys, inflation clocked in as the top issue for voters in the poll. 34% said it was the issue that made them the most likely to vote, and more than half ranked it as either the number one or the number two issue. Elevated price gains have caused political headaches for U.S. Democrats and the Biden administration. Republicans have released a barrage of attacks on the issue during their midterm election campaign. 48% of registered voters in the poll said they trusted Republicans in Congress more to handle inflation, the highest level recorded in the last four surveys, which spanned the course of the past year. 27% of respondents in the new poll trusted Democrats more to get inflation under control. CNN has also covered the same story. According to a closely followed University of Michigan survey released on Friday, 11th of November, consumers were feeling slightly worse about the U.S. economy in November amid punishing rate hikes and decades-high inflation. According to estimates on Refinitiv, the preliminary index reading from the monthly survey of consumers showed sentiment fell to 54.7% from 59.9% in October. Economists were expecting sentiment levels to tick down to 59.5%. It's the lowest reading since the summer when sentiment bottomed out after gas prices hit a record high in June. The survey showed that sentiment slumped both for the current economic conditions as well as for those in the near future. Surveys of consumers director Joanne Hsu told Bloomberg in an interview following the report's release, sustained high levels of inflation as well as rising interest rates are weighing on consumers, who are also expecting the labor market to weaken in the year ahead. Joanne Hsu said, consumers don't think we're out of the woods yet. The survey also showed that consumers' inflation expectations for this year and 5 years out remained relatively unchanged. This key data point for the Federal Reserve showed that the median expected year-ahead inflation rate was 5.1%, up from 5% last month. According to the data, long-run expectations were at 3%, holding in the same 2.9% to 3.1% range for 15 of the past 16 months. The U.S. Federal Reserve is closely watching for shifts in consumer expectations to determine if inflation is becoming entrenched in the United States. If consumers believe prices will remain high, that could factor in to increased wage demands, which, in turn, could cause businesses to raise prices. The data for the surveys was collected prior to the midterm elections, as well as Thursday's better-than-expected Consumer Price Index, CPI, which showed inflation slowed down to 7.7% in the month of October. The Associated Press news agency has more for us. According to a recent opinion poll, a third of American public say they have fallen behind financially, twice as high as the number of U.S. voters who said the same back in 2020. According to an Associated Press votecast, over the past year, prices have skyrocketed and the annual inflation rate has hovered around 8%. Ordinary expenses, including groceries, rent and gas, are eating into Americans' paychecks. A third of Americans said they're not confident that they can keep up with the expenses. About half of voters in the survey said rising grocery prices were the most significant concern for them, much higher than gas, housing, and healthcare expenses. Recent 2022 polling shows that Republicans are poised to take over the House of Representatives, but they have failed to take over the U.S. Senate. GOP candidates across the nation have hammered Democrats on the economy throughout the campaign cycle. According to an Associated Press survey, half of voters said inflation was a significant issue that factored into their vote, while 44% said the future of democracy was a major concern influencing their vote. Meanwhile, Americans are split on whether President Joe Biden is to blame for the high inflation rate, which half in the survey said the president was at fault, and another half said there were other factors outside of his control. With odds of a split U.S. Congress rising, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warned that lawmakers' failure to raise the statutory limit on U.S. debt posed a huge threat to America's credit rating and the functioning of America's financial markets. Janet Yellen told Reuters news agency in an interview on Friday, 11th of November, she said, "Cooperation is still possible between Republicans with Republicans on some issues, but lifting the debt ceiling is a non-negotiable item." Some Republicans have threatened to use the next hike in the $31.4 trillion debt ceiling as leverage to force concessions from President Joe Biden, a Democrat. America's public debt stood at $31.2 trillion on Wednesday, 9th of November, and without an increase, analysts anticipate a potential default crisis by the third quarter of 2023.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, pleasure and perfection. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Welcome to this show, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program. And I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. In today's program, we're talking about pleasure and perfection as connected to the man himself, as connected to the human being. Provided that we, or the human being, considers that the objective as desirable and that we beware of it and we need to pay attention upon reaching it, we need to struggle upon reaching the amount of pleasure that we need in life. Thus, we do not regard something desirable. Reaching it will bring about no pleasure for us. And likewise, if we pay no heed to reaching something, we will derive no enjoyment from it. As a consequence, in addition to the presence of one who takes pleasure in something and the object of desire, taking pleasure depends on having a specific perpetual power with which reaching the desired objective could be perceived. And in the same way, it hinges on recognition of desirability and paying attention to reaching it. Various degrees of pleasure depend on the intensity and weakness of perception, as well as desirability or attention paid by man. That is to say, a person's enjoyment of eating delicious food might be more than someone else's, as he might have a stronger and healthier taste. Or a person might derive more enjoyment from eating a particular type of food, as it might be more pleasurable for him. Or a particular person might derive more enjoyment from a special dish when he fully concentrates on the food, rather than on other objectives. In like manner, two students might derive different types of enjoyment from learning a specific branch of science due to their different views on the desirability and due to their different views on the utility and practicality of it. So the degree of pleasure in every human being differs from one degree to the other. Someone can have more pleasure on the same thing and the other can have lesser pleasure on the same thing. All this depends on the views of their desirability, the views of their utility, and the practicality of how they're dealing with the matter. Allah, 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 Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hossein Hinzano. Now, in today's show, we've been talking about the pleasure and perfection in the human being. It is clear that the stability of the pleasure depends on the endurance of conditions which lead to its emergence. The supposed pleasure is cut off when the one taking pleasure or the object of pleasure is destroyed, or when it is no longer desirable, or even when the person changes his mind or ceases paying attention to it. The multiplicity seen among the person taking pleasure, the objective of pleasure, and the conditions leading to the emergence of pleasure has general applicability in the case of ordinary pleasure. Now, the essence of pleasure, however, can be traced in other cases where no such multiplicity exists. In these cases, the word pleasure could be used with a kind of conceptual interpretation, as is the case with regard to science and fraction. We differ on how we go after the pleasure or any pleasurable deed according to how we are perceiving it, the concept that we are having towards it, the interpretation that we are having towards this particular attribute, this particular object, and thus making it different, making the world of pleasure in a man's world different from each and every human being. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Until next episode, inshallah, we will sit together and talk about this. We will touch more about this. Thank you so much for following up. Until next episode, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In Britain, millions of people are bracing themselves for an energy bill hike in April of next year as the government discusses raising the energy price cap. We look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Sun has more for us. Millions of households in Britain could be hit with energy bill hikes in April of next year as the government discusses raising the energy price cap. Energy bills are currently frozen at £2,500 for a typical British household under the energy price guarantee. The guarantee, which replaced the price cap when it rolled out from 1st of October, was initially supposed to be in place for the next 2 years. But after the fallout of the mini-budget and concerns over rising government debt, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, said the guarantee will only last until April of next year. Millions of people have been left in the lurch, wondering what will happen to bills when the guarantee ends next year. but the government is discussing the price cap back in place from April, which could be set at a higher level than £2,500 as part of the measures announced in the upcoming budget. Insiders say an energy price cap rise is more than likely to go ahead because bills are continuing on an upwards trajectory because of the energy crisis. It means that millions of people will more than likely see their energy bills rise to more than £2,500 on average. Targeted support will likely be given to those who need it most. It's not the only measure that could be unveiled in the budget. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, is considering extending a freeze on income tax thresholds until 2028, dragging millions of people into a higher rate of tax. Millions of Britons could be hit with higher council tax bills as the government mulls over whether to let local authorities hike the levy. But what is the energy price cap? The price cap on energy bills was introduced in January of 2019 as a way to ensure that households that are not bill savvy are not ripped off by their energy suppliers. It applies to customers on standard variable tariffs and default tariffs. Some customers think that the price cap is the absolute maximum that you can be charged on your bill, regardless of how much energy you have used. But that is not the case. This is simply a representation of the average household's bill, not a fixed upper limit. It sees the government limit the price suppliers can charge customers for units of gas and electricity. That means that your energy bill can still be higher or lower depending on how much energy you use and the size of your home. An increasing number of energy users are under price cap as there are limited fixed deals left out there on the market. The price cap soared to eye-watering heights this year due to the energy crisis. The website of Forbes.com UK has also covered the same story. Households and businesses with smart meters could be rewarded with discounts on their energy bills this winter if they reduce their electricity consumption during peak hours under a scheme launched in England, Scotland and Wales today. The Demand Flexibility Service, devised by National Grid Electricity System Operator, ESO, and approved by the regulator Ofgem, will offer discounts which could total up to £100 for households based on them receiving £3 per kilowatt hour and more for businesses. Energy customers will have to be with a participating supplier. Octopus, which last weekend took over the customer base of failed firm Bulb, has already confirmed that it will be running the scheme, having trialled it earlier this year. Other firms have been in consultation with the energy system operator ESO to launch the service for their customers. The firms will need to monitor electricity usage in real time, which means only energy customers on smart meters that can provide half-hourly readings will be able to participate in the scheme. The scheme will start with 12 test days between 3rd of November and 31st of March next year. Participants will be given 24 hours notice to reduce their electricity consumption for an hour between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. on weekdays. Customers who change their usage, for example, by using their washing machine or dishwasher at alternative times, will receive a discount. The electricity systems operator, ESO, will pay energy suppliers offering the service a minimum of £3 for every kilowatt hour during the test period. It is up to each firm to decide how much of the sum they will use as an incentive for their customers and how they will pass on the discount to their customers.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith and Selective Duty, Monday the 6th of Ramadan, 1394, the 23rd of September, 1974. All the response of the faithful when they are summoned to Allah and His Apostle that He may judge between them is to say, We hear and obey. It is they who are the felicitous. Whoever obeys Allah and His Apostle and fears Allah and is wary of Him, it is they who will be the triumphant. Surah Nur, number 24, verses 51 and 52. This is another very important issue in the discussion of faith. Namely, the moral duties of the believer do not only apply sometimes or whenever he feels like it. It is not the case that if someone calls himself a believer, even though he violates his moral code whenever it is convenient or beneficial for him, then he is a believer. Just because someone calls themselves a believer and makes a show of piety that he is such, that he has combined faith and action as he claims, it is only when faith and piety are of more benefit to him than transgression and sin that he returns to the names of Islam, faith and morality. Here we are going to discuss this quality that the Quran discusses in various contexts and which we ascribe to people who are self-serving. We said that self-serving people are like this. But all people in the world are self-serving. After all, who goes out in search of loss?
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
When we call someone self-serving, however, what we mean are those who are ready to sacrifice worldly benefits for their own personal interest. They transgress in serving themselves. Their behavior is like this. They believe and act piously to the extent that they desire and to the extent that is beneficial to them. They call themselves believers and make a show of morality and piety in the pursuit of personal benefit. From the point of view of Islam, these kinds of individuals are not believers. The Quran explicitly states that these people have no faith. Therefore, when we are discussing faith, which is one of the most fundamental topics in understanding Islamic thought, we draw the conclusion that if faith is not accompanied by a sense of duty and moral responsibility, if someone who claims to be a believer does not follow through by fulfilling these moral duties or doing righteous deeds, in the Quranic parlance, this is not genuine faith, and such hollow and empty faith will have no effect. In addition to this, we must also see that the kind of moral duty we are discussing is permanent and unceasing.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. You've done
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The Yemeni Ministry of Health and Population held a press conference in Sana'a to highlight the impact of the continued Saudi siege on the national drug supply program. The event took place amid a severe shortage of necessary medication in the war-torn country.
The Saudi blockade imposed on the national drug supply program has caused one of the world's worst crises in the health sector. Medicines do not arrive on time at all due to the closure of Sana'a's international airport, which has also led to a high rate of death among people with chronic diseases. Patients can't receive basic drugs such as insulin for diabetics, and this is a tragedy no one talks about.
The ministry says almost 169,000 patients cannot receive life-saving medicine and they are in real danger unless the siege is lifted.
The pharmaceutical system in Yemen has been gripped by the Saudi blockade. International companies have partially or completely left the Yemeni market as they face extra costs as well as seizure of vessels for weeks and months. Moreover, medicines should be delivered in special conditions to maintain their quality and effectiveness. The fuel crisis has also negatively affected the shipment of medication.
Earlier, the member of the National Negotiating Delegation, Abdul Malik Al-Ajri, accused Western powers of preventing the entry of medical supplies into Yemen, saying this precedent has never been witnessed throughout history.
Officials believe that Saudi Arabia is deliberately preventing medical supplies from entering Yemen to pressure Sana'a to accept the UN agreement as it is. They say the siege has failed throughout 7 years of the war, and the kingdom's measures will push the Yemeni army to carry out new airstrikes. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Days after going to the polls, the United States remains in electoral limbo. Dozens of elections for the House of Representatives still remain undecided, while control of the Senate is also up in the air, as two narrow races are still counting their votes. Just like in 2020, multiple battleground states have had controversial outages of their voting machines and surveillance equipment, leading to more questions by candidates and voters about the integrity of America's elections.
It speaks volumes, and we see these problems happening everywhere. If you ask me, a very common sense solution is to stop using all this technology to vote, because technology is easily hackable. None of it's secure, despite what anyone wants to say.
Projections show that Republicans will take the House, while the Senate will likely come down to a runoff vote next month. Democrats are trying to spin the idea that they could have lost worse as a positive outcome, but without definite results, political life is on hold with major consequences.
Going back to George Bush's own first election over Al Gore, you saw that it was in Florida, where George Bush's brother was the governor, that the ballots took forever to be counted in. So all of this technology, the oligarchy that we have even in America, these problems are not limited to the third or the second world. They're right here in America.
President Joe Biden indicated he will run for re-election, even though a recent poll showed that 72% of the United States doesn't want him to run, and that includes 56% of Democrats. Ex-President Donald Trump continues to separate himself from the mainstream Republican leadership, as he's expected to announce next week that he's running in 2024, refusing to wait until after the crucial Georgia Senate runoff vote next month. The latest inflation numbers barely